Welcome back to another episode of the Real Talk on Women's Health Podcast with Essentia Health. I'm your host, Lauren Wells, and in this episode, we're talking the importance of primary care, and I'm joined by Dr. Therese Durkin, a family medicine provider at Essentia Health. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me, and thanks for letting me talk about primary care.
Absolutely. So to start things off, can you kind of define primary care and what role it plays in healthcare?
Sure. So primary care covers a lot. I'm a family physician, but primary care is sort of people's first contact with the medical system. It might encompass pediatricians or primary care. GYN can be primary care, internal medicine, and then I think there are specialties that serve as primary care too. But we usually are the first contact. We try to provide comprehensive primary care, continuous and coordinated. So you might see us for something. We might be able to take care of it. And when people do get referred, the specialists usually send people back to us for kind of long-term management of any other issues.
So I'm always curious how you establish and maintain those long-term relationships with your patient as their primary care provider. And on top of that, is it strange to have a patient throughout like a big chunk of their life? I feel like that would be kind of surreal in a way, I guess.
To me, the long-term relationships has just been a real added bonus being a primary care family physician. I think when you interview a lot of family physicians, that's one of the main reasons they went into family medicine. And it's just an amazingly surprising thing that we can see people. You know, maybe we see people once a year, maybe a couple times a year, unfortunately, or maybe we go on a streak where they get seen by us a lot. But I don't think it's strange. It's just a wonderful avenue. It's a wonderful part of our job. I have worked in primary care for more than 25 years. And at one point, I attended births. I don't like the cradle to grave phrase, but from the cradle, and then have worked with people toward the end of their lives, too, and multi-generational. And it's just a fortunate part of our job, I think, to have that continuity.
So let's switch gears for a minute and talk about preventative care. I want to know from your perspective, why is preventative care important in primary care?
One of the reasons I went into primary care actually was because I didn't really like the hospital experience for people. One of my goals is to keep people out of hospitals and to keep them as functional as they can be. So that's where primary care has a role. I think we provide access that otherwise people might not have. So, you know, a kind of classic thing I hear is, well, I saw the obstetrician the last, you know, 5 or 10 years, and now I can't get in to see them for, you know, 6 months. So say somebody might see me for an ear infection, and then on the information on the computer, I say, oh, it looks like you're due for your primary care, you know, annual exam. And they go, yeah, I can't get into my GYN. Oh, okay. Well, if you're interested, I'm a family physician, and that's something I can do as well. And if you need to see GYN, you can. So you can schedule, you know, if it's more convenient at this time.
So obviously, a big part of primary care are those annual primary care visits. First and foremost, why is it important for people to have those visits? I know people that say, well, I don't need to go to the doctor because I'm completely healthy. So what would you say to those people?
Yeah, so that's a great question. For the annual visit, I think traditionally has captured cancer screening, which is important. And, you know, for cervical screening, pap screening, that's really changed a lot. So we don't have to do it quite as often, up to every 3 to 5 years after, you know, after 29, can be up to every 5 years. But it's an opportunity to talk about some of the other biggest risk factors for all of our health, including high blood pressure, complications of being above one's ideal body weight. So we get into, you know, disease prevention of diabetes and ultimately heart disease, which of course can impact too many people. The other thing that we do annual screening for is mood disorders. So a lot of people wouldn't have an opportunity to talk to a psychologist or psychiatrist, and maybe they don't want to, or maybe they thought, well, this is normal. Life is like this. And primary care does a lot of work on being an access point for people's mood disorders, sleep disorders, and we can gather a lot of information in that relatively small period of time.
So now let's shift into if somebody has like a chronic disease or they have a disease, how does primary care play a role in managing those chronic diseases? Because obviously they come in for their annual primary care visits, but theirs are probably a little more complicated, right?
So, you know, chronic disease management, that really encompasses probably more than 50% of our practices. This includes diabetes. Obesity is a chronic disease, as well asthma, COPD, high blood pressure. And so we end up, you know, addressing this issue at the annual visit. Sometimes we can combine things, but we end up seeing people with chronic disease probably 2 to 4 times a year, depending on how well it's controlled. People do see the specialist maybe once a year, but we are the kind of the backbone. If there's anything, you know, kind of acute that's going on, say someone has chronic lung disease and all of a sudden they've had a COPD flare, we know them. We often can keep them out of the emergency room. We can get them in sooner. And then if they're not responding to the, you know, usual treatment or their control is less than adequate, then we can get them back to the specialist. But we manage, you know, primary care is the kind of backbone of managing chronic disease like that, because any of us can get a flare of things, you know. And I think most of us know that when you call for a specialty appointment in any community, it's scheduled out months in advance. And the specialty care is expecting primary care, whether it's internal medicine, family medicine, pediatrics, to help manage that.
So on the topic of chronic disease, how do you collaborate as a family medicine provider with other healthcare professionals to ensure comprehensive care for patients that might have those chronic diseases?
Oh, sure. I mean, compared to years ago, the computer systems we have allow us to communicate directly to specialty care. And, you know, the specialists will get back to us. If I say I've got this complicated problem, I believe this is the next thing I should do, and then they're going to see you in 2 weeks, they can review that. And then there's a warm handoff for people.
So I want to switch gears and talk about patient education and empowerment. I say this on this podcast all the time, but I know so many people that don't go to the doctor. So how do you educate patients about the importance of preventative care and annual primary care visits?
I think first, I'm always glad when they come, because usually if they've made the appointment, there's a reason for that. And it may not be the reason that they told the schedulers or made the appointment for. I think acknowledging that it's really difficult to come to the doctor, it's inconvenient. And I think over the years, I have found that people may not have had the best experiences at the doctor, or they felt worse when they left, you know. And so I think it's a fine balance between saying, oh, you're here for this exam, versus getting to know them. And I don't always do everyone's full exam the first time I meet them. I think that's kind of intimidating. Kind of depends on what they want to do. But we just don't sit around and chat, but we work through things. And I think that's a really important part of my job. I also have found over the years that when people haven't been to the doctor in a long time, that there might be a long list of things that they, quote, should do. And I learned early on that if I try to get all of those done at the appointment, I will scare them away. So try not to do that. Maybe pick the top thing that people want to focus on, and kind of negotiating, you know, I might have a priority, they have a priority, and going gently with that. And I think at least I'll acknowledge there's a lot of mistrust of the medical system. And so that's part of it too. I think post-pandemic, that seems to be something prominent. So that's a fine line to walk as well.
So you touched on this briefly with your last answer, but how do you establish trust and build a strong doctor-patient relationship in primary care, especially because you just mentioned, you know, there's mistrust sometimes in the medical system, or maybe somebody comes to the doctor and they haven't been and they have a long list of things that they want you to check out. How do you kind of build that relationship?
I think all of us who are in primary care all really enjoy people and talking to them and being there to help them. So I hope that people feel that when they come in the door, you know, that we're glad to see them, that we're there to help them. But we actually are people that really like to help other people. So that helps a whole lot, I think. I think all people in healthcare do that. So at the time of the appointment, I do my best to get to know them. I think a lot of times, not a lot of times, but I definitely notice that people are hesitant. You're not sure if they're going to come back. You're not sure what they thought of the visit. And I think the follow-up we do with them, like, you know, sending out, when you send out a lab result, you know, maybe make, you know, inviting them back. I have been known to call people. I always want to call people if there's a lab abnormal, but I think calling people and saying, you know, I was just checking in on how it went yesterday. And they're like, you called me, you know? And so I think having that layer of we're available and we're interested in what happened to you. It wasn't just that I wrote a prescription today is important. I think one big thing in this day and age is that people have lost their primary care doctor. It's happened all over the country. And so one of the hard things is to be the person after, you know, to be the provider after your primary care doctor moved or left or whatever. And that's always hard. And so I usually tell people if they have a long medical history, I'm very transparent. And I found this to be true that usually it takes me like 3 times to really know the spectrum of what's happened. And that's probably not really fair because I've had 20 years of a complex illness, but I can't know everything that day and nor would I expect them to. Share everything that day. There's a TED Talk. One of my favorite TED Talks is by a writer, Atul Gawande. I don't know if you've ever seen that one. And it's from like 10 years ago. And he talks about how, you know, initially medicine was, you know, just the doctor was the cowboy and yet cowgirl, cowboy doing everything. And now in order for medicine to work very well, it's a very big group of people involved. And we need pit crews. We're pit crews that help people along the way. So that's a great, great TED Talk to be reminded of.
Yeah, I love a good TED Talk, so I'm definitely going to check that out. But as we wrap up here, I'm curious from you, what is one thing you want to leave listeners with? Because I feel like a topic like this, there's so many different facets of it. So what would you like to leave listeners with?
That we truly are here to help. And I think also to meet people where they are. We work as a team with our staff as well. We consider ourselves very fortunate to be able to combine our, you know, interests. I mean, obviously we enjoy science if we're doctors, but we're very lucky to have our jobs and to be able to help people. And that's probably the one thing that is a constant through everybody in primary care. So we are here to be helpful and also know that the systems are hard and it's scary to come to the doctor. And every time people come to the doctor, we're often able to tell people they're doing great and we're glad that they came in. So that's good too. So I guess I would say too, you know, like my job here at Essentia, I'm in the downtown clinic at First Street Clinic in kind of embedded in the same hallway is internal medicine and pediatrics and OB. So this is the first time that family medicine has been downtown. We are sometimes a stopping point for people. So their provider might be, who knows, at one of the community clinics, but say they need a surgery and we can get their pre-op done. We do a lot of that. You know, we currently have access. And so someone might not be able to get into their primary care doctor and I'm able to fill in for the day. And then we, you know, take care of things. And then I communicate with the primary and say, this is what was going on. They're going to see you back. So that's the other thing. If you don't get into your primary, you might see someone else, but the handoffs are very good. And I also get very good handoffs from the hospital and urgent care if someone's coming to see me with the communication. So I think that's a hesitation, like, I can't get into my primary care doctor for a year. You know, what am I going to do? Well, we can fill in and we're not going to replace that relationship, but we can still be helpful, I think.
Well, just by the sounds of it, it seems like you guys all work together. Patient is top of mind and you do what you have to do to make sure that the patient gets the best and most seamless care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what primary care does. You know, we're here to do that. And same with the specialties. I'll just throw in too, like one specialty that we can be helpful with is dermatology. So a lot of family physicians and primary care people have done a lot of extra training with skin diseases. And, you know, if you wait to see a dermatologist for that abnormal mole, it might be a long time, but we can do a lot of initial assessments. A lot of us in primary care do dermoscopy and biopsies. And then we can, if needed, then people can get to dermatology if they need something. You know, say they had an abnormal mole, we're able to do the biopsy. Sometimes, you know, a lot of times it's reassuring. You don't need to do more. But if it's abnormal, then we can get people in a more timely manner to dermatology for wider excisions, which is great. But I do hear people all the time call, they schedule with me and they say, well, I just really really need a referral to dermatology because of this, whatever it is. And I said, I can do that, but let me take a look at it and I might be able to help you. And, you know, I'll say a very good percentage of the time we can, and we can either do a biopsy or do the initial treatment. And then if they're not better, then they're halfway down the road to specialty care.
I can honestly say I had no idea about that. So that's good to know. I think listeners are going to love to know that as well, especially if they're on like a long waiting list somewhere or whatnot. But that just about does it for this episode. Dr. Therese Durkin, a family medicine provider at Essentia Health, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me.
Lauren, thank you so much for the chance to talk to everybody today. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, thank you everybody for listening to this episode of the Real Talk on Women's Health Podcast with Essentia Health.